Hello, and welcome to the Patrick Holford's Food as Medicine podcast. In this podcast, Patrick Holford, author of Good Medicine, explains why prevention is better than drugs and why modern medicine is so focused on drugs, when it is clear that the major diseases, cancer, diabetes, dementia, heart disease and obesity, are principally caused by diet and lifestyle changes. How did we arrive in this era of primarily pharmaceutical medicine? And what do we need for quantum leap into a new era based primarily on nutritional medicine? Patrick Holford explains.
Before the discovery of antibiotics, people died in their millions from infections. When penicillin became available in the 1940s, it literally saved hundreds of thousands of lives. The next blockbuster drug was cortisone in the 1950s. It miraculously cured people's arthritic pain and other inflammatory disorders. Thus, the myth of a drug for a bug, a pill for an ill, was born, and the pharmaceutical industry started to flourish. But then the dark side of cortisone emerged. Those on the drugs gained weight, their spines degenerated, and if withdrawn suddenly, they could even die. These side effects gave birth to the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, as they're called, such as aspirin. Very effective painkiller, but it can also cause internal bleeding. About 3,000 people in the UK die from drug-induced internal bleeding every year. So along came the COX-2 anti-inflammatories, like Vioxx. Painkillers without the gut damage, that was the promise. But they increased the risk of heart disease because these kind of drugs promote blood clotting. Okay, your joints don't hurt, but up goes your chances of a heart attack. Vioxx was withdrawn in 2004, and Merck, the makers, were hit with thousands of legal claims. One expert estimated that 140,000 Americans either died or now suffer from vascular problems as a result. Now, a similar story applies to many common drugs for today's chronic diseases. Take statins, for example. The story was simple. Cholesterol causes heart disease, so eat a low cholesterol diet and take cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. Egg sales went into decline, while statin sales boomed. They were so heavily marketed that some experts have recommended putting statins in the water supply and testing kids from age 2 for their cholesterol and then prescribing statins, if high. In 2007, the UK government's heart disease supremo said that every man over 50 and woman over 65 should be on them. Today, an estimated 8 million people in Britain take statins. Doctors are financially rewarded for testing your cholesterol, and they're paid again to give you statins to lower it. The top three selling statins alone have generated $200 billion to date. But the patents have run out, and so has the enthusiasm to sell them. Without the patents, statins, which now cost as little as 4p a daily dose, and half that to make, are no longer a significant source of profit for the pharmaceutical industry. We now learn they increase your risk for diabetes and memory loss, and do relatively little to reduce heart disease risk. Around 1,000 healthy people who haven't had a heart attack but do have some risk factors, such as being overweight or raised cholesterol, would have to take statins for just one death from heart attack to be avoided. And meanwhile, 100 of those 1,000 would be expected to have significant adverse effects. After the most popular diabetes drug, metformin, ran out of patent, the next hero drugs for diabetes were the glitazones, until they were found to increase the risk of heart disease. One of these glitazones was linked to an extra 1,000 heart attacks a year in the UK alone. Next on offer for diabetes were the GLP-1 agonists, widely advertised in the US, but already there are warning signs of a link with pancreatic cancer. If you ask the man in the street what causes diabetes, they'll probably say sugar and being overweight. Yet doctors are taught a lot more about drugs than diet and how to help people lose weight. I mean a lot. One leading medical school in the UK spends less than 10 minutes on diet and several thousand hours on drugs. Few even know that type 2 diabetes, which is the main kind, is a completely reversible disease with the right diet, and that is a low glycemic load or GL diet. A low GL diet also cuts the risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and cancer. Talking of cancer, we are losing the cancer war, not winning it. Back in the 70s, the lifetime risk of cancer was about 1 in 5, despite everyone smoking. Now, it's 1 in 3, and expected to hit 1 in 2 by 2030. Since 1970, the 5-year survival rate has barely changed from 49% to now 54%. For example, in the US, more than 1 million are diagnosed each year, and 500,000 die from it. Smoking accounts for 30% of a woman's cancer risk, while obesity accounts for at least 20%. Our ancestors were not only fit, they ate fit food. Lean meat, fish, fruit, vegetables, whole foods, no sugar, no refined foods, and virtually no dairy products or wheat. Survival in those days was hard work. Agriculture and milking animals is a relatively recent human development. Before the invention of fridges and refined food, all food was fresh and whole. Before cars, we burnt a lot more calories through exercise, and we ate a lot more fresh food and got more nutrients as a consequence. Now the average person around the world eats 24 kilos of sugar a year, and more than double that in the US, and probably the same again in effect, hidden in highly refined white bread, rice, and processed foods, whose sugars behave much like the white stuff. This mountain of sugar is also driving weight gain. Obesity is literally widespread. 12 million people in Britain are obese, and 500 die every week as a result of it. 1 in 3 adult Americans are obese, predicted to be 1 in 2 by 2030. In Dubai, the capital of diabesity, half of teenagers are obese, and in some schools, more than 15% have diabetes. By 2030, the prediction is we will have 2 billion people significantly overweight and 500,000,000 with diabetes. Already, for every person who dies from starvation, 2 die from obesity. The solution is obviously diet, not drugs. Drugs are loners. They don't work well together. Some diabetes drugs raise heart disease risk, and heart disease drugs raise diabetes risk. If you take bisphosphonates to protect your bones, it's virtually ineffective, for example, if you're on antacid drugs to lower stomach acid. The more you take, the sicker you get, and the more you need. In Britain, we have a 5-a-day policy. That is, by the age of 65, half of us are on 5 different drugs, 1 for each bit that breaks down. Following official medical guidelines, which results in multiple drug taking, is one of the greatest but most invisible threats to health in the aging population. Drugs also mug vitamins. The most popular diabetes drug, metformin, for example, inhibits B12 absorption, and it gives some people stomach trouble. Not to worry, there's a drug for that. PPI drugs that stop you making stomach acid, such as Nexium, which has clocked up $50 billion in sales. So you need stomach acid to absorb B12, and if you don't, your brains and bones are likely to shrink at a faster rate. Not to worry, there's a drug to stop your bones shrinking, bisphosphonates, but they knock out iron. Statins knock out coenzyme Q10, and blood pressure medications such as diuretics knock out even more bone and protective B vitamins and magnesiums, which are the very nutrients you need to lower your blood pressure. Osteoporosis, like every chronic disease, isn't caused by a lack of drugs, although it can be caused by an excess of drugs. Nor is it caused by a lack of calcium, for that matter. If you draw a map of the incidence of lowest osteoporosis across the world and a map of the highest calcium or milk intake, they bear no resemblance. In fact, the Milky Way, where most milk is drunk, is pretty much where you see the highest incidence of 21st century diseases. Drinking milk doesn't keep your bones strong. However, the further north you go, the greater the risk. Sun exposure, which makes vitamin D, can help you a lot more than any drug. If you live far from the equator, it's all rather depressing. Maybe that's why more than 1 in 10 North Americans have been prescribed antidepressants. But guess what? They don't work for mild or moderate depression, says NICE. That's the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, which advises GPs. And they double the risk of suicide, according to a British Medical Journal review of 702 studies. That's right, antidepressants double the risk of suicide compared with placebo. And as antidepressant prescriptions rise in the US, so too does the incidence of suicide. When makers of schizophrenia drugs, known as antipsychotics, wanted to increase their market, they changed their name to mood stabilizers. Then, simultaneously, more and more so-called depressed people were diagnosed as bipolar, enabling them to be given antipsychotic mood stabilizer drugs, as well as an antidepressant. Double the number of diagnoses and double the drugs you can prescribe, and you've got four times the market. There are now so many exotic mental disorders, including hoarding disorder, hypersexual disorder, internet disorder, binge eating disorder, which is defined as eating to excess more than four times every month, that most people can be diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder and then prescribed drugs accordingly. Drugs for mental illness generate in excess of $220 billion a year. In the time of Hippocrates, diseases were thought to be caused by the gods. He didn't buy that and set out to find the real causes of disease. He had a hunch a lot of disease was down to diet and lifestyle. Let food be your medicine, he said. Our current fixation with genes as the mysterious causes of disease are a bit like the gods of old, because genes actually play a relatively small role in most of the diseases you or I are likely to get. A maximum of 15% of the risk for breast cancer, for example, is due to inherited factors. And since not all inheritance is genetics, that means that even less than 15% is in the genes. Lately, people have become paranoid about having a cancer gene called BRCA or HER2, and more people are electing to remove their breasts, ovaries, and for men, prostate, just in case, without realizing the genes can be turned on and off by what you eat. After all, both breast and prostate cancer incidence goes up and up with every generation, yet the genes haven't changed. So why didn't your grandmother get breast cancer? The idea of removing the part that may get disease is a perverse kind of prevention. What do you remove for heart disease or Alzheimer's? One of the editors of the journal Nature said by the end of this century, genomics will allow us to alter entire organisms out of recognition to suit our needs and tastes and, quote, will allow us to fashion the human form into any conceivable shape. We will have extra limbs if we want them and maybe even wings to fly. But when the human genome was being mapped, it was predicted that we humans, being the most advanced species, would have about 100,000 genes. But when the genome was finally unraveled, we had a paltry 23,000. That's a bit more than a fruit fly, which has 17,000, less than a sea urchin, which has 26,000, and much less than rice, which has 38,000. In truth, all we know genes do is tell the body how to put proteins together. And from proteins, we make enzymes and hormones, for example. Now, it's true, having a defective enzyme or hormone could increase your risk for disease, but it rarely causes it. Only 1% of Alzheimer's, for example, is caused by genes. It's what you eat and how you live that switches genes on and off. For example, a low GL diet switches on a set of genes that keep you young and healthy, while sugar, on the other hand, turns them off. Instead of removing the body part, why not remove the diet part, such as sugar in the case of diabetes, or dairy products in the case of prostate and possibly breast cancer? According to the National Cancer Institute, 19 out of 23 studies have shown a positive association between dairy intake and prostate cancer. And the World Cancer Research Fund agree. If I told you I was 55 and still breastfeeding from another species of animal, you'd think I was weird. But name me one wild animal that breastfeeds into adulthood. There is none. Milk makes things grow. Unfortunately, that includes cancer cells. Hippocrates said, first do no harm. Prescription drugs have now become the fifth largest cause of death in the US. Excluding errors in prescription, that's overdoses, tens of thousands die every year from adverse drug reactions in the UK. Whichever way you cut it, modern medicine seems to have very little to do with health. Countries which have more doctors don't have less disease, nor do countries who spend more on so-called healthcare. When doctors go on strike, the death rate falls, according to Professor Robert Mendelson, who monitored medical malpractice for the US government. For example, when doctors in LA went on strike for 7 weeks due to a hike in their malpractice insurance, the death rate actually fell and then rose again in the 8th week when the strike was over. He called hospitals temples of doom and recommended staying away from them as much as possible, also staying away from medical checkups. There is, of course, a giant elephant in the hospital. The cause of the big five killer diseases, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and Alzheimer's, isn't a lack of drugs. If it were, we'd be winning, not losing, the disease war. It's down to the food we eat, what we drink, smoking, stress, and exercise. Genes play a tiny part. The reason our healthcare systems are failing is that no one is talking seriously about the F word, food, and how to change the 21st century diet and lifestyle that's killing us, because we are literally digging our own graves with a knife and fork. We've gone from eating no sugar to over 150 pounds a year in the US, and we've also switched to a cheaper but even deadlier form of sugar called high fructose corn syrup. We have been fucked. A 2-liter bottle of cola can provide over 50 teaspoons of sugar. We should be taxing sugar and sugary drinks as we do alcohol and cigarettes and spending that tax on health and nutrition education. We have to make good food more attractive and less expensive and bad food less attractive and more expensive. Instead, the best funded strategy for beating obesity is a $1 billion search for new drugs. That's about as sensible as trying to save the polar bear from extinction due to global warming by developing a drug to lower its body temperature instead of tackling the root cause. Similarly, we are facing our own extinction due to a kind of internal global warming, in which our body's metabolism starts to switch into a chronic state of inflammation. It's called metabolic syndrome, and it's the main driver behind most of today's ill health. Instead of giving a pill for an ill, we need to focus on the true causes of disease. But aren't we living longer? Well, yes, but the young are getting older quicker. While the average person today lives 10 years longer than 50 years ago, they actually have less healthy years and more years of decrepitude. Only 1 in 3 people reach age 65 healthy. The average woman, for example, in the EU is currently spending 10 years disabled, defined as unable to climb 10 stairs. In 2006, award-winning medical journalist Jerome Byrne and I gave a plan for action against each major chronic disease and a blueprint for a healthcare system that could actually work in our book, Food is Better Medicine Than Drugs. In 2012, we wrote 10 Secrets of Healthy Aging, concluding that the secret to surfing the silver tsunami was sex, no drugs, and rock and roll. The fewer drugs you take, the longer you live, and exercising, having fun, and staying in touch with friends and family are all vital pieces of the health equation. With the right diet, attitude, and lifestyle, you can add not only years to your life, but also life to your years. The vast majority of health conditions you are likely to suffer from in life, especially the chronic diseases, are primarily the result of too much of the bad stuff and or not enough of the good stuff. If you list to the left, you have bad health. In the middle, we have what I would call average poor health, but to the right, you have good health. When you repeatedly go for the bad stuff, a poor diet based on refined foods, a lack of exercise, or taking pharmaceutical drugs for prevention, your health lists towards the bad side. Your body goes into an unhealthy, inflammatory state, and all kinds of body systems become out of balance. The sicker you are, the more of the good stuff you need to restore balance. And that's why higher amounts of vitamins, minerals, essential fats work to reverse diseases. But supplements are a competitor to drugs, and as such, there's a steady stream of myths about supplements' ineffectiveness or dangers. In truth, no one has ever died from taking a multivitamin. You have, in fact, more chances of dying from being struck by lightning than from a food supplement. My definition of good medicine is, one, it is proven to work, that is, it prevents or helps reverse disease processes by addressing the real causes. Secondly, it's good for your health, even if you are not sick. Third, it conforms to your natural design and evolutionary principles. And it does no harm. Hippocrates was on the case more than 2,000 years ago. He said, when enough sins against nature have accumulated, disease suddenly results. He also thought that what's good for the heart is good for the head. I think he's right. The risk factors for Alzheimer's, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes are all very similar. It's 21st century diet and lifestyle that's killing us, not a lack of drugs. My latest book, Good Medicine, applies these principles to today's 75 most common diseases. Most of the advice about diet and lifestyle is not known to your doctor, not because there isn't good scientific evidence, but simply because it isn't taught in medical school. The truth is, if you want to find out how to prevent or reverse most of today's chronic disease, you are going to have to find out for yourself. The only person who can transform your health is you.
30 years of clinical and research experience has taught Patrick what really works for the most common health problems we experience. In his new book, Good Medicine, he covers over 75 of the most common health problems and offers simple things you can do to prevent or reverse that health condition. They are all tried and tested and have been proven to work in both clinical research but also in practice with people like you. For more information, go to www.patrickholford.com/books.